The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Isabel Harbin and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and former special advisor Salma Shah. Well, Dominic Raab has had a difficult week following what he clearly hoped was going to be a relaxing luxury holiday in Crete. Fraser, ministers' holidays are tricky, aren't they? Because they do need to get away and have a break, don't they?
Yes, they do. I was talking to a cabinet member earlier this week and he was asking me, look, what's your advice, Fraser? Is it safe to go on holiday right now? Now, this particular minister's brief is quite quiet, but if you're a minister and you do go on holiday, you're almost tempting fate. Now, I can't think of a summer in August as a journalist where there hasn't been some kind of scandal. Something's happened, the minister's on holiday, which can quite easily be portrayed as the minister doesn't really care. If he cared, he'd be breaking his holiday. And I've always thought this is rather unfair. It's just a way of adding an element of drama. And it also depends what you expect your government ministers to do. Now, I think that ministers under the British system are not intended to be experts. They're intended to give political guidance on a department of experts. Like the health secretary doesn't know anything about health, typically. The chancellor tends to know nothing about economics. Not quite the case now with Rishi Sunak in power. But they will give political guidance and they will let other people get on with it. In other words, they oversee the system, but they are not a cog in that system themselves. So, of course, they're going to try to get away. Now, right now, I would add to that I would, as a citizen, almost demand that those guys go and get on holiday, because you want them to be making good quality decisions, which they're not going to be making if they never get a break. We've had a pandemic where people have not been able to take breaks. A lot is riding on good decisions being made in Whitehall. So I'd be quite encouraged if politicians did take a break. And one of my great political heroes is Ronald Reagan, who made a virtue out of this. He had this saying that they say hard work never killed anybody, but I figured, why take the risk? That was his general approach. And I think if you're a competent minister, you will have people doing these things on your behalf. You don't need to be a Gordon Brown-style micromanager. Now, that said, there are such things as crisis, the London riots, for example. There are things where people do physically want to see the Secretary of State there giving leadership. But if you take Afghanistan, really, this was an American withdrawal. You've got a pretty impressive British presence there, and the British ambassador has personally been handling the visa applications in the embassy. It's been inspiring to see that kind of thing. Would you necessarily expect the foreign secretary to be doing the same kind of thing, especially on a Friday when nobody in Britain, Europe, America or Afghanistan could have predicted on the Friday how things would go by the Sunday, and on the Sunday Dominic Raab came back? Now, when you look at the mistakes this government has made, when you look at the sins that ministers should be held accountable for, Dominic Raab not coming back a day earlier wouldn't even make the top 150 mistakes, which is why I think it's absolutely bizarre that he's being asked to resign over something as small as this. There are far worse things going on inside British government right now, I hate to tell you.
Salma, do you agree with Fraser that this is all a bit ridiculous, focusing on where Dominic Raab was, given how easy it is to do remote working these days?
I think the problem with that assessment is that the British system, whilst it functions on experts within departments, is very, very reliant on the people that at the top of the department. So if you are Foreign Secretary or any Secretary of State, actually everybody is working to you, to your direction, because you are the only person with a democratic mandate to be able to, you know, push the agenda forward. And that's not just about setting policy. It is about being present during a crisis. I get the idea of sort of, you know, people being more relaxed because we have remote working and we've all learned a different way of being during the pandemic. But a crisis is completely different. And I think the dynamics of a crisis are different. And I think people need to be present in a room because there are things that you cannot say over phone, not least for security reasons. But also you have to be able to read people and situations and ask those follow-up questions and not sort of keep these things tied to 30 minutes. So there's a logistical side to that. And I also think it is really... Even though I do agree with the point that actually, you know, there's certain operational decisions that no cabinet minister is going to be able to have a bearing on and people can get on and do it. I think it is about coming across in a way that shows that you are gripping, that famous phrase in Whitehall, gripping the situation. And I think that is done when you show a commitment to the job, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, over your personal life. And it's one of those things that nobody's ever going to get the balance right on, but you cannot be in cabinet and think of it as a normal position. And I'm not for one moment saying that Dominic Raab has, but I think there has to be a recognition that this system is not built for people to have what anybody else might consider a normal life.
But Selma, it's funny that you've got some personal experience here. You used to work for Sajid Javid. And he's quite a master of the whole day scandals. Now, look, I might be getting this wrong, but whole day scandal number one was when he was the business secretary and there was a crisis over whether to save steelworks in South Wales. And he was on holiday in Australia with his kids and he was lambasted for that. He should be coming over to...
That is incorrect, though, because he wasn't actually in Australia on a holiday. He was there on a trade mission. And it just so happened that he'd asked the question as to whether he should stop off in India, in Delhi, where the owners of this particular steelworks in Port Talbot are based. And the advice that came up was no. It just so happened that his daughter was on the trip with him. So it was a work trip. Now, even then, I think the right answer was that he should have come back immediately because as he was in the air, the dynamics of the situation had changed. So we went from thinking that this was the stable situation to it progressing and rapidly changing. And I think that actually he should have come back sooner. And I don't know in hindsight whether he thinks that's the case, but he delivered a speech that he was going out there to do and then he came straight back. But that is not... See, that was cast as a holiday.
But the prosecution of Sajid Javid will continue now because when he was Home Secretary, there were people coming across the channel in dinghies. And this is at the time when this was a relatively rare event. Now, of course, they've been going across in dinghies for months and months and months and months and months, but it just happened to capture the news. And all of a sudden, where is the Home Secretary? He doesn't care. He's on holiday. He should be coming back to supervise this. Now, again, I couldn't quite work out just, if you're Sajid Javid, how are you supposed to make that call? How do you judge how sensitive a situation is? Is it when the papers decide to focus on a problem that's been going on for a while? But how do you find him there, Sam? Like, guilty or innocent?
Look, I think that is totally a fair point. And the judgment that everybody has to make is, are they going to be driven by a media decision because there is a furore about it that didn't exist before? Or are they going to accept the reality of the situation that everything that you do as a minister is going to be exploited politically one way or another? Now, either it's going to be exploited by the opposition, or as was in the case, as I recall it, when he was Home Secretary, exploited by people who were leadership rivals to him at the time and made a much bigger deal about it because, you put a target on your back if you're ambitious or successful in politics. And I think there is absolutely that element of it. And I think we do have to be a little bit careful about how we judge people, particularly ministers, because the context is always different and always changing. But I think it is just about that reassurance. So I am not saying for a moment that Dominic Raab should have raced back from holiday, but I do think that providing a response and providing some clarity about the accusations that are being put before you is a much better way of processing some of this for people who are rightly asking questions. But my general go-to rule is if you are in cabinet, you book short haul holidays only. And as soon as there's something that hits the pages, you have to come back. I really, and maybe this is because I was burnt before, having worked for Sajid, as you rightly point out, having sort of been tarred with sort of the the personality of being the guy that's always away, I think that actually you just don't want to risk it, because there is so much going on, and you as the figurehead of a department and leading on some of this stuff, it's much more important for you to be present and not provide that distraction when actually everybody should be working towards the issue and not towards the comms that have gone so badly wrong.
Fraser, let's just talk about holidays more widely and the problem of political holidays for prime ministers in particular. Gordon Brown was famously miserable when he went on a bucket and spade seaside holidays that he nevertheless went on out of a sense of duty because he wanted to appear that he was enjoying himself, even though he absolutely hated it. So for prime ministers, there's always a difficult question about where they go on holiday and what that says about them.
It's difficult to find a right answer to that. I guess Dominic Raab compounded his error by going to a place in Crete which describes itself as a, and I quote, sparkling boutique resort for the privileged and the perceptive. So the idea that if you're really sort of blinging it up on holiday, that tends to go down badly with voters, no matter if there's an emergency or not. Tony Blair, and to an extent David Cameron, would like to go for the big luxurious resorts, something owned by like Cliff Richard or Richard Branson, which has got the appropriate security detail. That's always the excuse for something opulent. I think Cameron in them worked out that if he basically took EasyJet to whatever destination he was going to, then it didn't really matter if he was staying in a magnificent Corfu mansion, as long as he paid like 60 quid Ryanair return and could be photographed in the pews with the rest of the punters. Even, I think, Prince William has tried that technique, getting some kind of flyby approach up to Scotland to contrast himself from his brother, who was notorious for getting on Elton John's private jet. So these things are political in a way where they shouldn't be, but they effectively are. And I can't imagine that a cabinet member would take advice from somebody like Salma and say, please, political advisor, tell me what's a politically correct option for me to go on holiday this year. One of the things that the Queen gets right is she basically goes to places that nobody really envies. So she will hang out in Balmoral. Not many people in England think, God, I wish I was up in the hills in Balmoral this summer. I mean, by the way, I'm Scottish. It's a beautiful place to be. I would highly recommend it. But there is a certain political savviness when it comes to taking your holiday nowadays. And I think Raab will probably regret having booked such an opulent getaway.
Salma, can ministers ever actually switch off when they're on holiday? I mean, it's something that has become a real sort of middle-class premium, isn't it? To go away somewhere where you can boast that there's no mobile reception and no Wi-Fi. But that's definitely not possible for a minister, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I think we are in this world where, you know, people talk about things like self-care and switching off and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is that the average person doesn't do that. I mean, ask yourself, when you're on holiday, how often do you actually take a whole day where you don't read the news or you don't check your emails or, you know, you don't happen to be on that WhatsApp group that they haven't taken you off of because you're away for a fortnight or whatever it might be? So in reality, nobody ever switches off. And I think ministers are probably the same. And, you know, Fraser had said earlier that, you know, he wants his ministers to be well rested and in order to take good decisions. I do think that you want a sort of an element of that. You absolutely want people to be functioning at their best. But we have to be realistic about the demands of ministerial life. It is a lifestyle choice. You don't go in to this kind of role and think, you know, great, this is kind of like pinnacle of success and it's going to be easy street and I'm going to have a great time. Actually, these jobs are really, really hard and they're not well remunerated, and that's not why people do it. So I think, you know, even to that extent, I mean, it sounds so horribly hair shirt, doesn't it? But I think to that extent, you know, most ministers probably don't get the rest that they need and probably won't do until they actually leave their ministerial careers, I'm afraid.
Salma, Fraser, thank you. And thank you for listening.